This audio is a talk by Renit Lenton, exploring the deepening relations between race, migration, the state and power in contemporary Ireland. It was recorded January 2010 as part of the Better Questions seminar series in Shomersbury in Dublin. Better Questions is an initiative that has emerged out of conversations between people engaged in either social movement practices in Dublin and or thought on radical social change. Their point of convergence is their recognition that we must develop better questions about the world around us in order to change it. This seminar series draws on a wide variety of critical theoretical perspectives to explore contemporary forms of power and possibilities for resistance. The talks take place fortnightly in Shomersbury, each Wednesday from 6:30 p.m. For directions, see the website shomersbury.org. The People's Kitchen serves food in Shomersbury each Wednesday from 8 o'clock, so as well as participating in the discussion, you can catch a meal afterwards with the other participants. A note on the audio, I rather foolishly left the recorder beside the digital projector, which had a noisy fan, and only noticed several minutes into it that this was the case. So the first 3 or 4 minutes of the audio in particular are a bit disrupted by the sound of the fan. This will get quieter as it moves on.
So the first topic is the question of race, migration and forms of exclusion and power relations connected to those issues. And I suppose this issue is a key one, and it kind of reflects a lot of what we hope to do, because it seems clear that the significance of the transformations in our society that have happened over the last, say, 20 years, and the new forms of exclusion and power relations that have emerged in relation to that transformation, that within the social movements we haven't fully understood that transformation, or been able to develop concepts which would allow us to intervene in those processes, and largely, although not entirely, social movements have, particularly the anti-capitalist social movements, have not been able to develop an adequate response to questions around racism and exclusion of migrants and so on. So that was the idea for the first one, and we asked Renit because Renit very much brings together the two kind of things we wanted to bring together with this project, which is the because Renit writes about new forms of racism in Ireland, in a kind of academic or research at the level of research, but at the same time through for example a column that she writes in Metro Éireann also tries to link those debates into contemporary political conflicts that are arising all the time. So I won't say any more. I'll hand over to Renit now. Afterwards, Renit will speak for around 45 minutes, and afterwards then we'll have an opportunity to discuss those issues, and we'll also, towards the end, say a few words about the upcoming seminars.
I'm really pleased to be here because it seems like a very good space, and I think there's some potential for exchange, you know. So so I want you to start by reading two quotes, and you can read it for yourself, you know. Alain Badiou on Only One World. Are you okay?
Only one world. Let foreigners teach us at least to become foreign to ourselves, to project ourselves sufficiently out of ourselves to no longer be captive to this long Western and white history that has come to an end, and from which nothing more can be expected than sterility and war. Against this catastrophic and nihilistic expectation of a security state, let us greet the foreignness of tomorrow.
Yeah. And the next quote is from Kostas Douzinas, I don't know, in The Guardian on the 1st of January. He basically says that, if the world can't be changed, the left should concentrate on small-scale projects. And I think he's challenging that, you know, in many ways. And I'll give you another quote from him later on. Okay?
If the world cannot be changed, the neoliberal argument went, the left should concentrate on small-scale projects, moral concerns, and the protection of vulnerable identities. Multiculturalism could replace radical change. Membership of Amnesty, that of political organisation.
So, on the 11th of January 2004, the Government of Ireland put forward a referendum to amend Article 9 of the Constitution to remove birthright citizenship from children who are born in Ireland to migrant parents. this right was actually there from the beginning of the state, from 1922, and the amendment did not include the children of 1.8 million holders of Irish passports who are not born in Ireland but who have one Irish grandparent, and therefore they're entitled to automatic Irish citizenship, not automatic but to Irish citizenship without having to set foot in Ireland. But as in the event, about 80% of the electorate voted in favour of this referendum. Some of you may not remember, some of you may remember. My argument is the nation state, which is theorized by David Theo Goldberg as a racial state, remains the focus of any analysis of racism. Foucault views racism as inscribed as the basic mechanism of power, as it is exercised in modern states. Foucault argues that the modern state can scarcely function without becoming involved with racism at some point. I view racism as a political system which aims to regulate bodies and not as individual problems, even though that individual voted in favour of the referendum. Lots of people say the referendum was not about racism, but that is something we can debate. Without suggesting that Ireland is an ideal type racial state, I employ here social theory to argue that, like other nation states, Ireland has evolved from being a racial state in which race and nation are defined in terms of each other, which is evident, for instance, in the very ethnically narrow definition of Irishness in the Constitution, to a racist state where governmental biopolitics, racializing indigenous groups and regulating immigration and asylum, form the construction of Irishness and otherness. Until the onset of the recession, racial terminology and categorization and control on the one hand and discourses of cultural diversity on the other underpinned the Irish state's response to the arrival of growing number of immigrants since the 1990s in the shape of intercultural and integration politics. Now, what I want to do here is, first of all, apply Goldberg's racial state theory to Ireland. Then I will discuss briefly Foucault's theorization of the modern nation state as a state of population, monitoring and controlling the nation's biological life, which then becomes the problem of sovereign power. Then I would like to argue that the tendency to redefine the nation state's boundaries means controlling not only immigrants but also existing minority populations, in Ireland particularly travellers. And during the tiger capitalism, state actors use contradictory discourses, claiming on one hand that Ireland was getting it right in avoiding both French assimilationism and British multiculturalism, and on the other hand, insisting that in order to integrate, migrants must do things in our way. However, since the recession, racism, immigration, integration have completely disappeared. The Minister for Integration has been not seen, and nobody's really want to talk about it. And I conclude by challenging social movements to reorient our activism to racism and immigration. So let's start with racial state, the concept of racial state. Goldberg posits the modern nation state as a racial state, which excludes in order to construct homogeneity, which he sees as heterogeneity in denial. The state is then a state of power which asserts control over those within the state and excluding others from outside. Through very simple, I think I have another slide here. Yes. Through constitutions, border controls, the law, policy making, bureaucracy, and various governmental technologies which seem very inoffensive, like census categorizations, invented histories, invented traditions, ceremonies, and cultural imaginings, modern states, each in its own way, are defined by their power to exclude and include in racially ordered terms, to categorize hierarchically and to set aside. In a modern state, race and nation are defined in terms of each other to produce a coherent picture of the population in the face of a divisive heterogeneity. Now, Goldberg makes an important distinction between anti-racism and anti-racialism. There's been quite a long tradition, particularly Paul Gilroy, that race should not be used as an analytical category. But Goldberg said that by anti-racism, it's concerned with the impact of racial ideologies and programs on the lived experiences of its victims. Anti-racialism is only concerned with concepts, with categories, and with words in order that invoke race. And a key innovation in his approach is to avoid starting with the usual line that racism has cleverly evolved and adapted to be acceptable in the new environment of political correctness. Instead, he expresses disappointment in movements against racism themselves for abandoning the programs halfway. Goldberg's core argument is that whereas each of these began as movements against broad social structures that produced the conditions for genocide, for exploitation, for slavery and segregation, they all petered out, becoming movements concerned with mere semantics. And again, here echoing what Gilroy said, that race should not be used as an analytical category. In his article, Race Ends Here. What Goldberg does, he proposes two traditions of racial states. The first one he called naturalism. Naturalism is, fixes people who are racially conceived as other, natives, who are seen as pre-modern, who are naturally, supposedly, incapable of progress. And the other one, historicism, which basically is the same idea, but it looks at progress and elevates Europeans over primitive people or underdeveloped others as a victory of progress. Now, if we look at naturalism Irish style, remember it's exemplified by English colonialism, which racialized the Irish as bestial. And here's a picture to demonstrate that very often the Irish are portrayed as apes. In many, there's huge number of pictorial depiction, and therefore incapable of progress. And Irish historicism creates its own racial inferiors through, firstly, the ongoing racialization of Irish travelers, who are conceived as Irish nationals but not always as white. And secondly, through governmental technology of asylum and immigration controls, which aim to restore modernity's order just when all certainties, economic, civil, sexual, cultural, seem to be collapsing. And thirdly, through biopolitical governmental technologies which regulate the life of migrants, but also equality mechanism which reproduce racialized population as ultimately unequal and needing our help to become equal. Now, the advent of the so-called Celtic Tiger economic boom transformed the situation where emigration outstripped immigration. You all know that, and I won't go through various facts here. While many immigrants were returning Irish citizens, Irishness became racialized in new ways. To borrow from Noel Ignatieff's book, How the Irish Became White, for the first time, the Irish in Ireland actually became white, and Irishness became equated with whiteness precisely when it became increasingly difficult to make this point. Historicism is one way of understanding this, or theorizing this transition, as it became clear that interpreting immigration and the presence of people of color as new underpins the elevation of Europeans and the respective racialization of non-Europeans as working towards progress and equality with the Eurocenter. Okay, am I kind of, you still with me? Okay. Now, let's move on to, this is kind of Goldberg's general idea. Foucault, biopolitics. Foucault argues that when natural life becomes included in mechanisms of state power, politics becomes biopolitics, and a territorial state becomes a state of population. The nation's biological life becomes the problem of sovereign power. Through a series of technologies, biopower creates docile bodies. And note, we are all docile bodies, and the best example I can give you is what we do in the airport. We all obey the orders and never question. The moment we question, by the way, somebody will jump on you and say, but we are all colluding in that. And the population, its welfare, wealth, longevity, and health become the subject and the object of government. Biopower is addressed to living beings and directed at all the processes that refer to the mass of humans. Birth, health, death, sickness, education, welfare, but also the gathering of information and statistics. Foucault differentiated between the sovereign power of old, the old territorial state, which basically can be summarized as make, die, and let live. The sovereign could kill at impunity, and the others just got on with it. And modern biopower, which can be summarized as make, live, and let die. In other words, the state is concerned with the life of the population. The modern state can scarcely function, he says, without racism, which he calls the break between what must live and what must die. Race no longer serves one group against another, but becomes a tool of social conservatism, a racism the society practices against itself or in order to defend itself. And the book that from which I'm taking it is called Society Must Be Defended, a tool of constant purification and social normalization. Biopower's racializing technologies in the Republic of Ireland, in doing all it can to maintain homogeneity by managing ethnic diversity, mean that it is arguably not merely racial, this is my argument, in its formation and use of discourse and practices such as the law, but also racist in terms of using biopower technology to control, in particular, but not necessarily exclusively, migrant and racialized populations. Okay, so basically what we're looking at now is various ways of racial categorization, because Irish historicism regards non-Irish others as inadequate citizens, candidates for citizenship, and employs patently racist legislation to criminalize, regulate, and control both immigrants and indigenous population. The first example is, of course, how indigenous population are being redefined, and this is the story of the travelers. Foucault used the concept of biopower to demonstrate how the ethnicization of racism shifts from intra-societal degeneration, in other words, controlling the people who are considered degenerate, to the threat posed from the outside. Thus, before I deal with immigration, I'd like to talk about travelers, who at 23,700 in the last census are Ireland's largest and oldest ethnic minority or racialized group, who have fought long and hard to be allowed the status of an ethnic group. Initially, this status was gradually recognized by the state, but in October 2003, the Minister for Justice, Equality and Law Reform, Michael McDool, RIP, stated that travelers no longer constitute a distinct group, which was why discrimination against travelers was inserted as a separate ground into the equality legislation, a very circular kind of argument. The 2002 housing bill criminalizes travelers camping on public and private property, despite the fact that commitments to provide accommodation to travelers was made by the government in the 1995 task force was actually never respected. Contradictorily, while the racial state deprives travelers of the chosen ethnic status, which would allow them to name their discrimination as racism, it does so in the pretense of caring, based on the Foucauldian kind of biopolitics, according to which the role of the state is to manage, and in this case, assimilate and settle the travelers, but ultimately aiming to segregate them. Robin McVeigh has argued that ethnicity denial actually smacks of genocidal discourses, and he cites the extermination or the annihilation of Roma and Sinti people during the Nazi time. Not surprisingly, the travel advocacy group in Pavi Point, not very far from here, was one of the CDPs whose funding was terminated in the last cuts. The second example relates to immigration. But despite the explicit admittance that in order, and the reason I talk about traveler, by the way, that when we talk about racism, people tend to kind of not talk about travelers. They kind of are around. But I think any analysis of racism must take travelers on board as well. Okay, so despite the explicit kind of admittance that in order to maintain the economic growth of Celtic capitalism needed migrant labor, the state is doing all it can at the moment to restrict immigration. Steve Loyal argued that the hegemonic construction of Ireland as an open, cosmopolitan, multicultural, tourist-friendly society obscures a harsh reality of capitalist production, exclusionary nationalism, and growing xenophobia in relation to both the state and the general population. The economic boom, instead of allaying racist fears, has consistently treated non-national immigration as a problem. And that's from the very beginning. Then we have the issue of asylum seekers. The state discourses from the beginning demonized asylum seekers as bogus refugees, economic migrants, illegal immigrants, or simply failed asylum seekers, linked them to criminality and breaches of state security. Asylum seekers are presented as costing too much and as competing with disadvantaged population for scarce resources. And crucially, the need to control them is presented as essential to the common good and it's subordinated to the integrity of the asylum process. Interestingly, Etna Louveid has argued that racial states need asylum seekers in order to redraw racial national boundaries that have become destabilized in the contemporary era. Although the number of asylum seekers has gone down to only 2,530 in 2009, by the end of November, there were still 6,583 asylum seekers in direct provision. They call it direct provision centers. I call it direct provision holding camps. They are prevented from working and or taking up educational courses, and they're forced to live on a comfort allowance of €19.60 per adult per week, and this is not raised since 2001. You laugh? Didn't you know about it? Did you know about it?
No, it's not.
All right. Children get €9.10. Just think what it buys you, you know? Okay. In 2009, only 90 applications were granted, refugee status, okay? And there also are regular deportations and returns. And we just checked recently the website of Inish, and this is going apace. It's not, they don't deport or return as many as they wish, but they do, okay, on a regular basis. Now, Ivana Batic has said that in response to legal challenges of the Immigration Act, the Supreme Court basically ruled against the argument on discrimination. Thus, she said, the law differentiate not only between citizens and non-citizens, non-nationals, but also between categories of non-nationals, upholding the legitimacy of public policy, which facilitates the better administration of the asylum system. So the third example is to do with the Irish-born children debate. Just as travellers were no longer accorded the status of ethnic group, so too children born in Ireland to non-citizen parents were suddenly accorded a new category called Irish-born children. Think of it, all children born in Ireland are actually Irish-born children. And this racially differentiated them from children born in Ireland to citizen parents. This right to automatic citizenship was consolidated by the amended Article 2 of the Good Friday Agreement, which still assigns all those born in Ireland as part of the nation. So they're part of the nation, yet they're not citizens. The amendment meant, as was ruled in the 1989 Padrugiono case, in Supreme Court case, that migrant parents of children born in Ireland had the claim to remain in Ireland to provide care and company to their citizen child. This permission to remain was overturned in 2003, when the Supreme Court ruled in the Loben or Sayande appeal that non-national so-called parents no longer had a strong case to be allowed to remain in Ireland to bring up the child. The Supreme Court privileged the state's right to deport and the integrity of the asylum process over citizen children's rights. The ruling exposed the contradiction between two constitutional entities, the nation on the one hand and the family on the other, which is termed in Article 41 of the Constitution as the natural primary and fundamental unit group in society. While still part of the nation, as I said, they were not entitled to citizenship, which is another contradiction. The court ruling in the LNO case illustrates the centrality of the law as a governmental technology employed by the racial state, upholding control in the face of the anarchic of order in face of disorder. Chief Justice Ronan Keane ruled that the state was entitled to take the view that the orderly system of dealing with immigration and asylum application should not be undermined by persons deciding to take advantage. Now, the contradiction between the common good and the exclusion of those termed by the state as being outside the remit of full citizenship illustrates Foucault's insistence that racism is a defense mechanism exercised by society against itself. Now, it's quite an interesting story here because it actually teaches us about social movements. So I'll go through it in some detail. In the wake of the 2003 ruling, the Minister for Justice removed the process whereby immigrant parents could apply for permission to remain in Ireland due to being parents of citizen children. As a result, 11,500 migrant parents of Irish citizen children became candidates for deportation. And for 2 whole years, the minister refused to consider the right to remain to migrant parents of Irish citizens. But during these 2 years, of the 341 people deported, at least 20 citizen children were also deported. I mean, not deported, but taken away with the parents. And the state basically said, well, they should really go with their parents, very clearly. However, rhetoric aside, and due to the mobilization of CADIC, which I'll talk about in a minute, it was a coalition of migrants and migrant support and human rights organizations. It was initiated by AKIDWA, the African African and Migrant Women's Network. After the state actually won the referendum, the decision was reversed. And as a result, about 16,000, almost 17,000 applications were granted temporarily to remain, but didn't get any right to family reunification. Some of these cases are still going on. The fourth example is the citizenship referendum. Now, despite the state's main message that Ireland's citizenship laws, unique in the EU, were being exploited, Colin Harvey says, he's a lawyer working on constitutional issues, he links state sovereignty to the insistence by states on determining who is entitled to enter the territory and become a citizen, and argues that immigration and refugee law, with its focus on the award of a status, leaves too much to the racial state to decide. The purpose is always to secure national level protection, which puts completely negates the argument about the need to harmonize Ireland's so-called generosity with citizenship standards in other EU states. However, the Minister for Justice emphasized that proposed changes was actually anti-racist rather than racist, and the greatest contribution to racism and xenophobia would be if it was perceived that the government could not control immigration. And this poster kind of demonstrates what social movements have put out as kind of in response. Okay, a comparison between asylum seeker and migrant. Well, I think it's quite an effective poster. Okay. Now, throughout the referendum debate, migrant mothers, which I kind of theorize as mothers because there's a whole others kind of element there, were completely vilified. The position as deliberately having babies in Ireland to gain citizenship for themselves and residency for their partners. And maternity hospitals were seen as swarmed by migrant mothers, but given that the minister admitted that the maternity issue was only a side issue, and in the research that Derval King did for us in CADIC, it showed that there were actually no statistics to support the state's claim about large numbers of non-EU nationals coming to Ireland to give birth. The total figure of birth to non-EU national mothers were 548, which was under 2.4% of the total number of births in these hospitals, hardly a slant. Etienne Balibar posited the idea of crisis racism. He says that immigration is a new name of race, but he says also this is linked to historical appellation that enables individuals to be classified in a racist typology. Therefore, he asks, should we therefore keep quiet about racism, or should states indeed suppress the cause of racism lest we prove unable to control its effects, which means send home the foreign bodies while being prepared to assimilate all those who are assimilable by their nature or by aspirations. Okay? I want to move now to kind of responses of the state to the kind of migration problem. That's why I've argued that in regulating, managing, and controlling immigration and indigenous minorities, so as to maintain homogeneity, Ireland moved from racial state to racist state. And this has been debated. Brian Fanning, for instance, thinks that he devoted a whole chapter in his new book to which he called against the racial state. Not everybody agrees. But Goldberg reminds us that in the move from anti-racism to anti-racialism, race and racism are completely disavowed and completely omitted from both states' vocabulary, and but also from other people's vocabulary. See, for example, the decision already in January 2009 to axe the government's own anti-racism advisory body, the NCCRI, the National Consultative Committee on Racism and Interculturalism. This was one of the first bodies to be cut. And the racial state appropriates difference, Goldberg says, actually through celebration of the multicultural. And I would like to show you now how this is seeped in contradictory racial narratives of heterogeneity. Irish integration policies have derived from economic needs, but also from a willingness to need from other countries, mistakes, substituting interculturalism and integration to the narrative of the crisis or the failure of both assimilationism and multiculturalism. But there are, so to say the integration was articulated by Lenehan, the Minister for Integration, is a two-way street involving rights and duties. This was aimed at migrants who reside, work, and particularly those who aspire to Irish to be Irish citizens. Of course, he didn't talk at all about the referendum, which actually closed the road to citizenship. And in fact, to get Irish citizenship is getting to be increasingly difficult. Okay, and here's a little reminder of the Minister Lenehan, who is no longer with us. The kebab thing reminds us that in a Dole debate, when Joe Higgins talked about the Gamma workers, Lenehan said something, go back to your kebabs. And then he is the one who's appointed to be Minister of Integration. Bizarre, okay? But this is kind of exemplified by what happened on the ground. In 2004, the Garda advertised for recruiting members from Irish Ireland new communities, and it refused to allow a Sikh volunteer to the reserve force to wear his turban on duty. The Garda insisted that the turban ban was not based on race or religion, but rather on providing an impartial police service, requiring, amongst other things, our standard uniform and duties, or dress. At the same time, it claimed it declined to rule on the wearing of Catholic symbols like crucifixes, ashes, or pioneer pins. And in fact, only recently in November 2009, the ban was reiterated in a conference on diversity, in the name of diversity, which the speaker said had taken on, this diversity has taken an intercultural model where diversity was respected and reflected in the force. And the force rejects the assimilationist model where newcomers would have to accept the majority status quo, which is very contradictory if you can see. It's interesting that Dr. Jasbir Singh, who is one of the leaders of the Irish Sikh community, said that this ban affects not only naturalized Sikhs, but also their Irish-born children. Okay? People who are born here and to naturalized parents are, in fact, entitled citizens. So it actually affects citizens as well. Yeah? I think the turban ban was a very important turning point and a missed opportunity. And it demonstrates the minister's confusion because in support the Garda stands, they both claim the need for immigrants to assimilate into our culture and our norms in society. On the other hand, warning that Ireland needs to learn from the mistakes of other countries and the whole issue of integration. Okay, now, the point is when culture is both the object and instrument of governmentalities, and when racism is denied as forming an integral part of state control over incoming minorities and existing minorities, or indigenous minorities, seen as culturally rather than racially different, then diversity and integration themselves become racist. In After Optimism, Robbie McVeigh and I have argued that basically the transition from combating racism to accommodating cultural diversity, that the refusal to name and address state racism ideologies for interculturalism, integration, actually become racist themselves because they function to protect the operation of state racism. In other words, we're not really racist, but we have intercultural policies in place. The Garda, that's what the Garda are doing. We're not really racist. Look at us. We have all these intercultural policies. Okay, so to conclude, we kind of want to look at where we can go and what we can do. So here's another quote from Costas, and I think it's a really terrific quote. and you can look at his article online in The Guardian. But what he says that one should become more radical as one grows older alongside the 21st century. Now, you're still young, but I'm kind of closer to Kostas in age, perhaps older than him. But I think, yeah, you know, that really the message, rather than become more acquiescent and more docile, you know. The recession actually makes a huge difference to Irish people's perception of migration. We have a colleague called Martina Byrne who's researching the professional class attitudes to immigration. Basically, she done two sets of interviews, one before the recession, one after the recession. Basically, her interview said to her, no longer interested, no longer concerned with immigration, integration, interculturalism, not on our radar anymore. We were, but no longer. And in the Christmas Eve triumphalist statement that migrants are going home, you know, I think it sounds rather like wishful thinking because they don't really know. They said that only 57,000 of the 118,000 foreign nationals who received PPS numbers in 2004 were still either working or claiming welfare in 2008. But it is not known, and this is interesting, what happened to the rest. It is very likely that they left the Republic, but there's no monitoring of who leaves, just monitoring of who has PPS numbers, you know. And in fact, there was an interesting article by Cathy Sheridan in the Irish Times that showed that Polish people, yes, some are going, but the majority of them like Ireland. God knows why, but they like Ireland, you know. And the point is that it's not, the story of their leaving is not quite as simple as all that, yeah? Meanwhile, deportations are going ahead. And return flights, and some deportations are named return flights, but they are actually voluntary return flights. So according to INISH, which is the Irish Naturalization and Immigration Service, which is a one-stop shop for immigration. Now, think of it, one-stop shop, the idea that, you know, kind of like the IDA, they have, you used to have one-stop shop. If you take into account deportations, voluntary returns, Dublin II Convention return, which is the return of people from one EU state to another, and removal of EU citizens, who are mostly Roma, though the INISH doesn't say so, in 2007, a total of 781 persons were either removed or assisted to return, and a total of 834 in 2006. It's kind of going down a bit, because you can watch the... It's not a huge number of people, but it's constant. And very often people are rounded up at night. Very often people are given only a few hours to prepare because some of these deportation flights are done in conjunction with other EU states. And a plane is hired, say, to go from one state and to Britain and to us and then going down to Nigeria, particularly. Okay? What I'd like to kind of end with to say the celebration of diversity, interculturalism, and integration... A first, fast giving way to wet dreams about a not too distant future of Ireland, which I call green again, white again. Meanwhile, migrants are having completely different dreams and different. They're doing different things. This demonstrated my research project in the Trinity Immigration Initiative on migrants' network. We've mapped about 430 migrant-led organizations in Ireland, which is really exciting, and our interviews are showing us really interesting things. Now, what is interesting that migrant networks, the research is doubly grounded in the opportunities and constraints of the specific ethno-racial locality of post-referendum Ireland, on the one hand, and in the heterogeneous, often contradictory networking practices engaged in by migrants. And the practices of migrants organizations can be theorized, I think, as integration from below. Both, in one hand, they strategically adopt state discourses such as interculturalism, integration, so as to secure funds and to secure a place at the table. And at the same time, they resist these very discourses, which ultimately negate power inequalities, deny migrants crucial funding, and a meaningful independent voice, and appropriate migrant intercultural practices so as to bolster the state's own image of, aren't we doing things right? So despite the success of migrant organizations, the question of who speaks for who remains very important. And this is where I see the challenge to social movements. It is crucial to make race and racism part of the debate, and it's crucial to resist the neoliberal speak about migrants filling or not labor shortages. basing anti-racism on the lived experiences of migrants as demanded by Fanon is absolutely central. But it is very important to remember that we don't just elicit these experiences for our analysis, because researchers often do that, and even movement activists often do that. You tell us your story and we make the analysis. We decide what actions. Okay, and many migrant organizations will say that they have to compete for funding with a group that support them. You know, you say you want to hear our voices, one person said to me, but then you compete with us for funding. Okay, relinquishing the space or the stage for the racialized is a real challenge, I think. So, true anti-racism, I think, is always about state racism. All your integration policy and intercultural practices really avoid the issues. And in organizing against racism, it is really useful to consider what Kansika Monchengo, he used to be in various organizations, including one of the most successful ones, ARASI, which is the Association of Refugees and Asylum Seekers in Ireland, which has long since been incorporated into something else. But he also worked for the NCCRI. And he talked about the early days of the migrant-led activism in the 1990s. And the co-optation of migrants into state and NGO work. And what he said, there was anti-racism campaign. There was a group, but now, okay, they have an organization now. People are paid. People are managers from different ethnic minorities, but this is not a movement. But this is yesterday's story, because today, many of these people are not paid, and many of the organizations are closed. So we have kind of a double whammy, you know? That for a while, there was a period where people were really incorporated, interculturalism, integration was really part of the story. Today, it's gone. So the challenge for social movements like yourselves, particularly in the area where you work, is double, you know? So this is me. So maybe I'd be happy to discuss and talk to you about some of the ideas. Thank you.
This recording is of a Better Questions seminar at Sean Esprit. For more details on Better Questions, see www.thought-movement.blogspot.com. You can read Ronit Lenton's blog at www.ronitlenton.net. A second recording, available at http://anarchism.pageabout.com, is the 40 or so minute question and answer session that followed this talk. This audio was recorded and edited for publication on indymedia.ie and elsewhere by Andrew Flood. You'll find over 100 audio interviews, recordings and news reports that I have recorded over the last decade at http://anarchism.pageabout.com/cat/audio.